Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:04 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 22nd. I thought we'd kick off today looking at the Baltic Dry Index. It has firmed pretty impressively over the course of the last week, and it is at the upper side of the 8-year base formation. So there is a temptation to think that when the Baltic Dry Index is weak, that it represents a headwind to global, or it's a barometer for weak global growth. But the index is up from 500 to 2,000 this year. There's nobody crying about or shouting from the rooftops that this is representative of an economic revival. One of the reasons that the index has been rising is because of the IMO 2020 shipping regulations, and there are going to be substantially fewer ships next year. There's certainly going to be a lot of ships that have had these scrubbers installed, and that is going to be a factor because the cost of those scrubbers often exceeds the value of the ship, and then the question is whether it is just simply better off to scrap the ship. So there is a certain amount of supply inelasticity meets rising demand to this narrative, and that's much more about aspects individual to shipping than to many other factors. But I thought it was interesting to highlight this because there is a lot of worry right now about the transportation index, and the fact is that it was firm in here today. And also the banking sector was in positive territory. When we look at the transportation index, it has been going sideways for a year and a half. It's below the trend mean. The trend mean is it falling. It's been falling all year. So that is indicative of, on average, prices are declining. And we're at least seeing some evidence of support coming through at the lower side of the range, or at least the region of the lows put in early June. I think a lot of people would be a lot happier if the price was above the trend mean, much less above the 11,000 level. When we look at the S&P 500 airlines index, then we can see that airlines have been doing better. They have been definitely range-bound for over 2.5 years. But there is an upward bias to trading so far this year, despite the volatility. And we are starting to see some steadying. Airlines obviously have got the headwind from oil prices on occasion, but that's hardly a reason for them to be worried at the moment, considering that oil prices are on average trending downwards. And oil prices were in negative territory in here today. When we look at the coal price, then I think that is going to give us a better insight into exactly what's going on in terms of that underperformance of the transportation sector. Coal prices have been down rather heavily this year. That was following a renaissance in terms of pricing between 2016 and 2019, where the peak from 2011 was retested. Then when we think about what exactly is going on in terms of the coal price, well, there is plenty of supply and there is increasing competition from natural gas. Natural gas does not travel by rail or by truck, and that's a significant factor in, I think, the underperformance of shipping. When we look at the natural gas price, it has been trending downwards in a really quite consistent manner, and the succession of lower rally highs remains very much in place. There is plenty of natural gas around. It's getting increasingly cheap, and it is highly competitive with coal. The underperformance of the CAS shipping index and the fact that shipping volumes are below 2018 but above 2016 and 17. There are a number of factors that are at play here. These are, in I think, important points to have at least some view on, because there is a cacophony of people predicting a recession. When we have so many people that have got the same view, then we have to question whether that is in fact imminent or whether we're going to get the bubble first. I think that's by far the most important characteristic here. We have certainly got the fact that year-over-year comparisons for the shipping index are not favorable because 2018 was such a blowout year because there was a massive inventory build ahead of tariffs being imposed. Then we have the simple fact that coal prices have been declining, and that does represent a headwind. But the other point is that it's usually when people have forgotten about an inverted yield curve, when they have been treated to a pop on the upside that allays their fears, that's when you do tend to get a recession. The S&P 500 continues to firm from the region of the trend mean. All other factors being equal, this looks like a bullish consolidation. And I think that's by far the most important fact here. If it looks like a bullish consolidation, the chances are that that's what it is. And there is, I think, therefore potential that we're going to see the bubble phase emerge. Now, of course, there is a lot of speculation going on about exactly what Jay Powell is going to say at Jackson Hole. 10-year yields are rallying from the 1.5% level. That represents the lower side of the range. It's certainly not rallying, though, in a dynamic manner. And it would be, I think, quite normal to anticipate that we could have a 30 basis point move in terms of the yield. It could get back up to about 1.8% and range for a few months. That would still be a consistent downtrend. It's going to have to do substantially more than that in order to confirm that we're getting more than some short-term steadying to unwind the really rather deep oversold condition that's in the yield. But of course, that's translates into an overbought condition on the price. And the price has been pausing for most of this month. The chances are, I think, that it is going to pause for at least another month. And of course, then we're going to come up to the September Fed meeting. Well, investors are already pricing in the potential that the ECB is readying a raft of additional stimulative measures. Bonds look particularly overbought at the present time and do look liable to at least pause and consolidate around this 180 level, particularly in view of the fact that they are at an all-time high. And I think the scale really gives us a clear example of just how profound the move has been in bunds over the course of the last decade, considering that bonds tend to mature, well, they don't tend to, they do mature at par, which is at 100, and the price of bund futures right now is at 180. That's a pretty incredible set of circumstances. And the last time we saw bunds trading anywhere close to par was as far back as the late 1990s. So this has been an incredible bull market. And there isn't really any evidence yet that it's over. And in order for it to be over, well, we would need to see clear trend inconsistencies. But one thing we do know, and that has been, we've got plenty of examples of this over the course of the last couple of decades, is that when it does become really very overextended relative to the trend mean, that it is liable to unwind that overextension. So the bulls, I think, are on borrowed time here for the Bund market. What I found particularly interesting was that the Bundesbank came out today and said that Germany doesn't need fiscal stimulus at the present time. Well, obviously they're not talking to manufacturers. This, I think, is by far the biggest question. It's not so much about Whether there is a recession risk or not, there is a clear recession risk. It's really about the big question that leads to recessions is when central banks make mistakes. And the question today is not so much about the recession risk, it's about whether they're in the process of making another big mistake. The market is clearly signaling that the economy needs additional stimulus. Whether that is monetary or fiscal, I think the solution is probably going to be a combination of both. And considering the fact that they've tried monetary stimulus on its own, then they tried fiscal stimulus on its own, at least in the USA, well, now it's looking increasingly likely that they're going to try both in tandem. And that is potentially positive. Europe is badly in need of additional stimulus. And the Bundesbank might be saying that Germany doesn't need fiscal stimulus, but the export sector is badly in need of it. And I think that is one of the most important points, that regardless of what the Bundesbank is saying, it's inevitable that Germany is going to have to implement fiscal stimulus in order to rescue the economy. There is the clear potential that the Trump administration is going to levy tariffs against the German automotive sector. Now, if that were to happen, it would definitely cause a recession. And that is going to necessitate fiscal stimulus in Germany. The DAX index has bounced over the course of the last week, and I do think that there is potential here for additional upside, but that is contingent on the lows holding. And the risk is reasonably contained because, considering the bounce we've had, that should be a low of at least near-term significance. And if the market has further to go now, then we will see the rebound improved upon. I think it is going to be highly dependent on the outlook for Wall Street and whether the S&P can continue to advance. But then, of course, there is the additional potential for the euro to continue to weaken. Having rebounded to unwind its short-term oversold condition, it has now come right back down to test the lows, and it has paused over the last five sessions. Europe definitely does not want a stronger currency. They can't afford it. And they are likely to do what is necessary to ensure that they don't end up with a strong currency. The Chinese renminbi today was also at a fresh low and is testing the 7.1 area. I think that it is very unlikely we are going to see the renminbi trading stronger than 7 anytime soon. China definitely needs a weaker currency, and they potentially need a weaker currency more than Europe does. If we think about what exactly is going on in China, well, they have a slowing economy. They are much more dependent on the export sector than the USA is. And that is the Achilles heel. And there's plenty of evidence of slowdown and of changing consumption habits in China as well, certainly towards moderation. That's also part of the reason why luxury goods sales in Hong Kong have halved over the course of the last month. Of course, the other reason for that is because there are several hundred thousand people on the streets protesting, and that's not a particularly benign environment for the retail sector. When we look at the Hang Seng, it was in negative territory today, and it has bounced from the 25,000 level, and it has about 1,000 points in which to consolidate, but it does need to hold that 25,000 point level. Well, that also represents a reasonably tight stop, considering that it has fallen from 30 to 25,000. It's at 26 right now. The upside potential is that it could regain the peaks if things start to look up, but so far, the rebound has been reasonably modest, and the lower side of the range is, or at least the lows put in over the course of the last decade, are a lot closer to 18,000. That's where the downside risk is. So there is obviously a clear potential here for for some volatility in Hong Kong stocks. There has also been some speculation in investing circles about the sustainability of the Hong Kong dollar peg. Well, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority has got a substantial quantity of dollars in reserve, so they have got the resources to defend the peg. Perhaps a broader question is whether it is strategically still opportune to maintain the peg, and whether they should perhaps change the peg to a renminbi peg. That would allow the currency to weaken, and it would remove some of the pressures that are building on the economy. That would be a profound change in terms of the monetary policy for the region. It would obviously tie Hong Kong much closer to to China than it already is. And that's going to be, I think, more of a political decision than an economic one. But the other point, of course, is that it would represent a sale of approximately $450 billion from Hong Kong's reserves. They'd have to buy renminbi. That's, I think, one of the biggest arguments against them changing it, because it would put upward pressure on the renminbi, and that's the last thing China wants at the moment. So I do think that it is unlikely that Hong Kong is going to change its peg. Now, when we think about Japan, the market has been bouncing from the 20,000 level, but not in an especially dynamic manner. I continue to monitor the second section index, and it is at a new low. There has been a succession of lower rally highs since the beginning of 2018, and that does represent a headwind to any kind of return to outperformance by the Japanese market. I think that's, and until that condition changes, then we have to maintain a more cautious attitude towards Japan, I suspect. One country where it is looking increasingly likely we're going to get both monetary and fiscal stimulus persisting is Australia, and the ASX 200 continues to consolidate following the very impressive advance we've seen in the first portion of the year, as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, and most particularly the 6,000 level, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But again, Australia is another country that definitely does not want a stronger currency, and the Aussie dollar is still trading below the 68 level. Of course, the devaluation of currencies is one of the clearest bullish factors behind the continued run-up in precious metal prices. And when we think about the incredible advance we've seen in Australian dollars, and for that matter in pounds, then this puts it into perspective that while the moves that we've seen on dollar crosses or on the various cross-currency rates have been, in many cases, reasonably modest. The kinds of moves that we've seen in gold, where investors are clearly looking to hedge their exposure to fiat currencies, then I think that is where we have clear evidence of investors looking for a safe haven. And I think the fact that gold is at new all-time highs in Australian dollars, pounds, euros, and a substantial number of additional currencies, that is a clear indication that something important is going on here, despite the fact that, and it also helps to highlight the fact, I suppose, that the dollar has been among the strongest currencies in the world over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. That has been one of the factors that has limited the upside for gold in US dollars. The price continues to consolidate in that US dollar price around the $1,500 area, but so far it doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. Silver prices were in mildly negative territory in here today, but this continues to look like a recovery scenario, and so far this range that's persisted for most of August has occurred above the one that happened in July, and the last three ranges are relatively similar sized. This remains a really quite consistent advance. It remains a clear recovery candidate, and it has very clearly broken the three-year sequence of lower rally highs. This does look like a new bull market. It won't be truly confirmed, however, until we see a sustained move above $20, and it looks there's no evidence to suggest that this isn't still a recovery scenario. Platinum prices were in positive territory in here today. There has been a mild upward bias to trading over the course of the last 12 months, and it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. And considering the discount that platinum is trading at relative to both gold and palladium, I think there is ample scope for a return to outperformance if we do start to see interest coming back in. I think it's only a matter of time. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of the NASDAQ, it has been the clear leader in terms of performance for Wall Street over the course of the last decade. It also has, I think, rather bullish consolidation characteristics over the course of the last 6 months. But what I found particularly interesting in here today was not so much about which companies were leading on the upside, but it was the fact that it was Chinese-oriented companies were leading on the downside. Baidu, in particular, has been trending down in a very clear manner for most of the last 12 months, and their earnings were somewhat more positive in here today, but they really have a lot of work to do to really arrest the decline. JD.com, which is a pure play on Chinese consumers, was also in negative territory in here today, and it is definitely does need to continue to hold the region of the trend mean if recovery is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Chinese tourists have been one of the biggest supports for the global tourism industry over the course of the last decade, but Ctrip is trending downwards, and it encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean in here today. And more than anything else, that I think gives us an indication of the health of the Chinese consumer. The willingness of Chinese consumers to travel abroad and spend obscene amounts of money is obviously having an impact, or is being impacted by the trade war and the slowdown domestically. I think if we're thinking about where the risks reside, then a more pronounced slowdown in China has got to be at the top of that list. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.